Russia pulls out of the Black Sea grain deal.
The Russians have informed the International Maritime Organization today that they are lifting the guarantees for safety of navigation that they gave. They're revoking them. So ships, they are no longer guaranteeing safe passage of ships through these maritime corridors in the Black Sea.
Plus, the main bridge from Russia to Crimea rocked by an explosion.
One of the bridge's sections was blown up in what Russian officials say was a Ukrainian attack.
And later in the program, Wagner mercenaries turn up in Belarus, and Ukraine's intelligence chief is on a mission to win the information war. Today is Monday, July 17th. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening, I'm Steve Karish in Washington. On Monday, Russia backed out of the deal that allows grain to be exported from Ukraine to countries in Africa, the Middle East, and Asia, where hunger is a growing threat and high food prices have pushed more people into poverty. The Black Sea Grain Initiative was a breakthrough deal brokered by the UN and Turkey. It allowed for millions of tons of grain to get to world markets. For more, I'm joined by VOA's UN correspondent Margaret Bashir in New York, where Secretary General Antonio Guterres has just wrapped up a press conference.
It's not really a surprise, to be honest, Steve, because they've been making a lot of noise about this for several months. There have been a couple of other periodic renewals and extensions of the deal where the UN wasn't sure Russia would agree to let it continue. But this time they've made good on their threats. So Russia is saying that they're not getting enough out of this deal. Basically, they're mad because they haven't been able to export ammonia, which is used for fertilizer. And this has been their biggest complaint.
And what does this mean for world food supply? How much food was getting through because of the grain deal?
So in the nearly year that this this humanitarian corridor, I should say maritime corridor, has been in effect, there's been nearly 33 million metric tons of food that has gotten out to the rest of the world through it. And the UN says this has really stabilized food prices. It's brought them down from a high last March to where they were pretty much pre-invasion of Ukraine. And the UN Secretary General told reporters just a few moments ago that the UN is going to continue to try and facilitate access to global markets for both Ukrainian and Russia food and fertilizer, because food security and price stability are just critical right now, especially in a world where 345 million people are suffering from food insecurity.
Going back to what you said about Russians and the ammonia, isn't their fertilizer part of the deal? How come Russian ammonia is not being able to be exported?
So it's a complicated situation. The Russians say it's because of Western sanctions. But in fact, there are no sanctions on Russian food products or fertilizer products. So they're not included. Part of the problem is that insurers, shippers, anyone involved in the movement of ammonia to global markets is anxious about doing business with the Russian Federation right now, because they are kind of isolated in the world. They're not seen as being a good guy, and companies don't really want to be affiliated with them. So this initially was the biggest problem. Then the United Nations worked very hard to get what they call letters of comfort for these companies from governments in the West, saying, look, we're not going to put third-party sanctions on you. We're not going to punish you if you do business with Russia. Go ahead. So it's hard to say where it's going to end up, if they're just posturing now because they want to put pressure to try and get a little more of what their demands are. If they will come back, they claim they'll come back. It may not be so easy to come back. So we'll see where this deal goes from here. But the Russians have informed the International Maritime Organization today that they are lifting the guarantees for safety of navigation that they gave. They're revoking them. So ships, they are no longer guaranteeing safe passage of ships through these maritime corridors in the Black Sea. So you can be sure insurance companies and the owners of these vessels are not going to be moving their ships through these corridors now. So even with or without them, this can't happen now.
Now, you mentioned just a moment ago that Secretary General Antonio Guterres gave a press conference. You were there. What did he have to say?
Well, he's extremely disappointed. He's really put so much work into this deal initially to get it. A year ago, he really worked very hard to get it. He's put two of his top officials on this, negotiating, one with the Ukrainians, one with the Russians, to try and keep it going. He deploys them every time there's a hiccup. You know, he's worked very hard to get this. And he wrote a letter to President Putin last Tuesday saying to him, here are some proposals. Let's try and keep this deal alive. And he read out a big chunk of his letter to the reporters today, which is very unusual for him. He's extremely into quiet diplomacy. He doesn't like leaks and things like that. But he actually quoted from his own letter to Putin saying, look, I made all these proposals. I made these efforts. They rejected them. We did our part. Like, don't blame us, I think was essentially his message. But at the end of the day, he says we will continue because we need to have global food security and we need price stability.
Margaret Beshear is VOA's correspondent at the United Nations in New York. Margaret, thanks for your time this morning. Thanks for your reporting.
Thank you.
Meanwhile, the Minister of Agrarian Policy and Food of Ukraine spoke with VOA's Eastern Europe Bureau Chief Miroslava Gongadze earlier on Monday.
На експорт український вплине погано, очевидно, тому що
Ukrainian exports will be badly affected because shipping grain by sea is the most efficient way to ship grain from Ukraine. We will fight for this grain corridor and we will use all other methods of export. Globally, this decision will have an impact in such a way that the poorest people in the world will be put on the brink of starvation by Russia because they will be forced to pay more for food and buy less of it. This once again confirms that Russia's statement and its specific actions, as usual, don't match. It seems that the world and the countries of Africa and Asia that do not understand this before are now understanding it more and more.
That's Mykola Salsky, Minister of Agrarian Policy and Food of Ukraine, speaking with VOA's Miroslava Gongadze. President Recep Tayyip Erdogan of Turkey, one of the original architects of the grain deal, he said on Monday that he believes Russian President Vladimir Putin does indeed want the deal to continue.
Despite the statement made today, I believe my friend Putin, President of the Russian Federation, wants this continuation of this humanitarian bridge.
Erdogan said his government will contact Moscow on Monday in an effort to revive the agreement.
Today, our foreign minister will have a meeting with his Russian counterpart. And with this meeting, I hope that we can quickly proceed and resume the grain deal without interruption. Maybe in the meantime, we can take further steps with a phone call with Mr. Putin without waiting for August.
And another big story today, the Crimea Bridge. A key supply line for Russian troops in Ukraine was badly damaged on Monday. An explosion killed two people and injured a child. The AP's Charles de Ledesma has more.
Traffic on a key bridge from Crimea to Russia's mainland has been halted after an attack that killed two people. One of the bridge's sections was blown up in what Russian officials say was a Ukrainian attack that also killed a married couple and injured their daughter. Russia's National Anti-Terrorist Committee says the attack had been staged by the Ukrainian Special Services and had involved two sea drones. Ukrainian officials haven't claimed responsibility for it, which is the second major strike on the bridge since October, when a truck bomb blew up two of its sections. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
VOA's Eastern Europe Bureau Chief Miroslava Gongadze spoke with Natalia Homenyuk, the spokesperson for Ukraine's Southern Military Command, about the bridge.
Destruction of the enemy's logistical routes is destroying his potential, making it impossible to supply resources to counter. Therefore, any logistical artery along which the enemy pulls up its forces is a legitimate target. And destruction of it, naturally or unnaturally, is work for the counteroffensive to advance the destruction of the enemy's potential in any way.
знищення потенціалу ворога в будь-який спосіб.
That's Natalia Homenuk, spokesperson for Ukraine's Southern Military Command. She spoke with VOA's Miroslava Gungadze on Monday. For more on the Crimea Bridge, I'm joined by our reporter in Kyiv, Anna Chernikova.
Well, we kind of have confirmation from Ukrainian authorities, but it's not like a direct statement saying that, well, we did hit the bridge, but there is this official telegram channel from the Security Service of Ukraine. In the morning, they posted a photo of the bridge saying that, this is something that basically which is happening with the bridge. So it's not a direct, again, it's not a direct confirmation, but here inside the country, everyone is talking about this, and some anonymous sources, and of course we cannot verify this information for now, but there is information that it might be a special operation from the Ukrainian Security Service and naval forces.
Anna, how important is this bridge? How many ways are there in and out of Crimea?
Well, for Russia, it is extremely important. It's a direct connection, and it's the shortest connection from Russian land part to Crimea. There is only the only other way is the long one, and how they can get into Crimea is they have to go through Mariupol, through this southeast part of the country, which is currently occupied. So this is the way out, and from that area they can get to the territory of Russia. But this is like a huge circle. It creates really a lot of, if we talk about civilian transport, it creates a lot of, this traffic jams. If we talk about military equipment, which is moving, and military vehicles that have to, well, that go regularly from the Russian land part to Crimea, this also creates additional, of course, traffic, and takes quite much longer for them to get to Crimea and to supply their forces there. So for Ukraine, and this is not a secret, Ukrainian Security Service and Ukrainian intelligence said a lot of times that this bridge should be destroyed because this is not a legal bridge, and for Ukraine, it's important that it is not functioning.
And we'll leave it there for today. Anna Chernikova in Kyiv. Anna, as always, thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Steve.
Despite not advancing on its goal to join NATO, Ukraine did receive several security assurances by the military alliance's members during their summit last week in Vilnius. And as VOA's Veronica Baldaris Iglesias reports, the Biden administration emphasized this again on Sunday, that its support for Kyiv remains strong.
The question of whether the war has reached a stalemate was raised to White House National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan during his appearance on the ABC News Network.
You're seeing Ukrainian forces, in fact, make progress both in the east and the south. We said before this counteroffensive started that it'd be hard going. And it's been hard going. That's the nature of war. But the Ukrainians are continuing to move forward.
As Sullivan emphasized the Biden administration's commitment to provide Ukraine with the weapons it needs, U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen, who is visiting India, talked about other measures being taken to weaken Russia's belligerence.
We will also continue to cut off Russia's access to military equipment and technologies that it needs to wage war against Ukraine. One of our core goals this year is to combat Russia's efforts to evade our sanctions.
During the recent summit in Vilnius, NATO members stood by Kyiv despite not offering it a clear roadmap to join the alliance. Ian Brzezinski is a foreign policy analyst at the Atlantic Council.
Well, let's not underestimate what the Ukrainians did get out of this. First, they got the continued endorsement of support through commitment to long-term security assistance, the provision of military equipment and ammunition.
But for that support to remain strong, NATO members must step up their financial contributions, said Republican Senator Dan Sullivan on NBC.
It's undermined the sustainability of NATO when only 7 of 31 members of NATO currently meet their 2% of GDP obligation for defense spending. And look, that, in my view, has the potential to undermine even support for Ukraine in the near term and longer term, the support for NATO.
U.S. President Joe Biden, however, made it clear last week that Ukraine won't need to wait for NATO membership to receive long-term security assurances. He was referring to a new framework unveiled by the group of 7 of the world's most advanced economies that paves the way to address Kyiv's current and post-war needs. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Karish. Wagner mercenary fighters are in Belarus. Ukrainian and Polish officials confirmed following a video released by Minsk showing them training Belarusian soldiers. It's the first indication that a deal to end Wagner's mutiny last month is being implemented. Lucy Fielder of Reuters has the story.
Fighters from the Wagner Group have arrived in Belarus from Russia. That's according to Ukrainian and Polish officials and comes after the Belarusian Defense Ministry released this video on Friday, showing what it said were Wagner fighters instructing Belarusian soldiers at a military range. It appeared to be a first sign that at least part of a deal to end Wagner's mutiny attempt was being implemented. Wagner's march on Moscow in June could have tipped Russia into civil war, according to President Vladimir Putin. Under the deal, Wagner chief Yevgeny Prigozhin stood down his mercenaries and agreed to move them to Belarus in exchange for Russia dropping mutiny charges. But until the past few days, there'd been no sign of them going there, and Prigozhin hasn't been seen in public since June 24. On Saturday, a spokesperson for the Ukrainian border agency confirmed Wagner was in Belarus in a statement posted on Telegram. And video shared by Russian war correspondent Alexander Kotz on Saturday evening appeared to show a convoy of trucks and military vehicles on a highway in southern Russia. Some were flying the Wagner flag. There was no immediate comment from the Kremlin. The Belarusian Hayun Project, which monitors military activity in the country and is viewed as an extremist formation by Minsk, said a large column of at least 60 vehicles with Donetsk and Luhansk license plates entered Belarus overnight Friday from Russia. President Alexander Lukashenko hasn't sent troops to Ukraine, but he has allowed Moscow to use Belarusian territory to launch its invasion and as a base for Russian nuclear weapons. A Polish deputy minister also said on Twitter that Warsaw had confirmation of several hundred Wagner fighters' presence in Belarus. Poland said this month it was bolstering its border with Belarus to address any potential threats.
That's Lucy Fielder of Reuters reporting. As more offers of support pour in for Ukraine, President Volodymyr Zelensky warned that Russia was throwing all its resources into a campaign to stop Kyiv's troops from pressing their counteroffensive. Olivia Zolino has more.
South Korea's Yoon Suk-yeol met with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky on Saturday during a surprise trip to Kyiv. Yoon said his country will send a bigger batch of military supplies, as well as $150 million in humanitarian aid. Last year, South Korea gave Ukraine non-lethal supplies, such as body armor and helmets. His visit comes after he traveled to Lithuania for the NATO Alliance Summit and visited Poland this week, where he expressed solidarity with Ukraine against Russia's invasion. Zelensky asked Yoon to boost military support when they first met in May. In his nightly address late Friday, Zelensky said Russian forces are pouring their resources into stopping Ukraine's troops from pressing on with their counteroffensive. Kyiv is working to take back swaths of land in the east and southern part of the country, all captured by Russian forces. But Ukrainian military analysts suggest the move is not easy for Ukrainian forces. Russian accounts said its forces had repelled Ukrainian attacks in eastern Donetsk region, including around Bakhmut. Reuters was unable to verify battlefield reports.
That's Reuters' Olivia Zelino. For an intelligence chief running Ukraine's spy operations during war with Russia, Krylo Budanov has built up an unusually public profile, one that he's used to get his message out and used to menace Russia from afar. Reuters' Ilan Rubens has the story.
Ukraine's intelligence chief is on a mission to win the information war. Kirilo Budanov runs the country's spy operations. But the 37-year-old spymaster has built up an unusually public profile since Russia invaded Ukraine in 2022. Widely circulated official videos back up the theory that the work of a spy boss cannot stay in the shadows.
This is the conflict of the 21st century. All the conflicts of the 21st century, by the way, have been defined by colossal work in the mass media field.
Budanov says he has sources close to Russian President Vladimir Putin. He noted, without providing evidence, that he accurately predicted Russia would invade before the full-scale war broke out in February 2022. He also cited an intercepted survey conducted by the Russian Interior Ministry that apparently showed the mutineering mercenary boss Yevgeny Prigozhin had support inside Russia.
Yes, we have our own sources in the closest office to Putin, so as to say. This is why we usually know what's going on, and we find out ahead of time, not reading it in the news.
Budanov began his military career as a special forces operative. He served in the East after Russia illegally annexed Crimea in 2014. Since he took charge of the spy service in 2020, there have been numerous failed attempts on his life. Budanov has seen his popularity and public profile surge inside Ukraine during the war, where he is portrayed as a behind-the-scenes mastermind of efforts to strike back at Russia. But in Russian media, he is a hate figure. Moscow has blamed Ukraine's secret services for the murders of a pro-war Russian blogger and a journalist. Kyiv denies any involvement. Russian media reported that a Moscow court had arrested Budanov in absentia on terrorism charges. The idea of a spy agency sending assassins to hunt down Ukraine's enemies has drawn comparisons with Israel's Mossad. Budanov doesn't resist the analogy.
As for the comparisons with Mossad, everyone has their own approach and methods. If you're asking about Mossad as being famous for eliminating enemies of their state, then we are doing it, and we will be doing it. Everyone who tries to scare us, hoping it will make an impact, you will regret all of this very soon. Our response will be imminent. Just wait and see.
That was Reuters' Ilan Rubens reporting. And that'll do it for us today. Stay up to date with continuing coverage on Ukraine and news from around the world 24 hours a day. Visit us online at voanews.com and be sure to follow VOA News on social media. On behalf of the entire Flashpoint Ukraine team, thanks for listening. Until next time, I'm Steve Karish.
Of America, Washington, D.C.